7 FM. There is increasing pressure tonight on President Akufo-Addo for him to personally take control in the wake of the worsening power crisis. Large parts of the country continue to be plunged into darkness every single day due to what everyone now know to be the inadequate supply of fuel to power the thermal plants we have. Only last week, President Akufo-Addo broke his silence on the issue when he commissioned the Kumasi 1 thermal plant, but did not announce any concrete steps to fix the problem.
In the areas of power generation, transmission and distribution, my government has made and continues to make significant investments towards the provision of reliable and competitively priced electricity to assure economic growth. This is part of our commitment to realizing the 2030 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. I do acknowledge Regional Minister, Minister for Energy, ladies and gentlemen, and Nananum, the challenges that the people of Ashanti and indeed of other parts of the country have had to endure in very recent times over the supply of power. And I can only thank you for the patience you have exhibited in the face of these challenges.
Well, civil society organizations and other analysts are tonight turning on the heat on the president and his appointees for immediate action. Former UN senior governance advisor, Professor Bafo Ejimendua, believes the president has failed to show leadership.
An aspect of good governance, certainly, is the responsiveness of government when citizens express concern about critical issues as we are facing. But so far, I think we are lacking leadership on this crisis. We know the feud between GRIDCO, ECG, PURC, and others, and this is the time we have expected the president to take charge, just as he did successfully during the COVID era, when he was able to brief us periodically on the situation. This current crisis is almost nationwide, and there's a huge public concern expressed through many media, especially on social media. People are very frustrated, and I think it's an occasion for the president to be seen as being in charge. And I wish the president can assemble those players in the energy sector and give them marching orders and assure the nation that serious efforts are underway to rectify the situation. So far, I think we haven't seen much transparency on this matter. We haven't seen a real concern expressed by government, the president, on this matter. And therefore, the whole nation seems to be just bemoaning and lamenting the crisis without any serious response from government. That is not proper in terms of good governance and leadership. I think the president is ultimately responsible. The buck stops on his desk. So if your minister in charge of energy is not displaying any concern and therefore serious approaches to solving the problem, it is up to the president to make that decision. But certainly, there's a widespread content about this matter in the country, especially because 2015-16, towards the elections, this was a major issue. And I think, according to most analysts, the loss of the election by the NDC government at the time, was largely due to the dooms. So it's surprising to many of us that after 7 years successfully managing the sector, now we are beginning to see almost the same situation that led to the loss of election by the NDC.
Well, energy analyst Kwame Jantua says if the president and his team cannot fix this situation, they must all resign.
I don't understand the situation where we don't want to open up and be transparent about this particular issue. Rather, we tell the Minister of Finance, please find money, find money, find money. How much money are we talking about? How much? We gave you the country to look after, your management to look after, to make sure that it is being run well. If you really got to a point to do it, get out of the soup. Get out of it. Because we cannot continue this way. At least give us a time this will end. And if it's in perpetuity, then we know it's in perpetuity. So we plan.
The operative word there amongst this cocktail is finance. That is the operative word. You need finance to be able to buy feedstock. You need finance because gas is a challenge. Apart from that, the other side of the question that makes it even more difficult is the personal interest bit that is in there. And we need to address. Look, I was expecting the president, when he commissioned the K1 in Kumasi, I was expecting him as an opportunity to tell to Ghanaians, yes, we appreciate the patience you've had for us.
Well, in Parliament, the minority is shocked at the silence of the Energy Minister, Dr. Matthew Opoku-Pempe, in the midst of the crisis.
Apart from the minister telling us to go and publish our own timetable if we are fed up with the load shedding, and I haven't heard any concrete measures from the Ministry of Energy. I thought that by now, the Ministry of Energy should engage Ghanaians, tell us the real problem, the challenges we are facing, its consequence, and the steps being taken to deal with the challenges.
And that there is John Junapo. He is a minority spokesperson on energy. The fundamental question, as you've heard already, is money, finding the funds to buy enough gas to power the thermal plant. Okay, so if it's that simple, why is government struggling? Let's break it down for you. I want to bring in my colleague Kofi Ajay with a reset desk, joins us in the studio right now. Doomsaw is simply because of the lack of funds. We've heard that many times. So how much do we need to purchase fuel to power the plants?
Well, Evan, so according to the Energy Commission in their 2024 energy sector outlook, according to them, in 2024 we need a total of $1.14 billion to buy fuel to power our plants. Monthly, if we do the breakdown, that's about $95 million every month. Each day, $3.2 million, and in the next 8 months we need about $760 million to buy fuel to power plants.
Those are jaw-dropping figures there indeed. Monthly of $95 million, and government in the past have relied on several sources to find the money to buy the gas for us, and the reason why the lights have been on for so long. But we're now beginning to learn a bit more about these sources and the status of these sources. What do we know?
Well, so let's start with ECG collection, which is currently under recovery, and according to the budget, the 2024 budget, the energy sector shortfall is expected to hit 23.65 billion Ghana cedis. So definitely whatever ECG will collect this year, there will be a shortfall of 23.65 billion Ghana cedis. Now let's go to tariff.
So what it means is that first source isn't enough.
It's not enough.
Won't even make a dent in what we need to ensure that your light is on and your light is on continuously for a long period of time. What about borrowing? They can borrow, can they?
Absolutely. And let's go to the securities, the government securities that they usually issue to get this money. So first one is the bonds market. We know after the DDEP, that market has collapsed.
So the Dutch bonds, the ESLA, the GOG bonds
are all dead. Yeah. And in fact, if you look at the BOG, for instance, they usually will come in to support the government. But now they've been made to sign a 0% financing agreement with the finance ministry. And so they cannot come in to bail out.
Okay, but what about, treasury bills, etc.? I mean, that will bring in some money.
That has been the pool of hope for government this year. They are currently targeting to borrow more than 90 billion Ghana cedis from this pool. But currently we know that interest rate is currently on the decline, and this is no longer becoming attractive, especially the short term. And we've seen the latest one that they issued, there were some marginal under subscription events.
Okay, so it's not as sexy anymore
Absolutely.
To buy the treasury bills, and so they're not raising as much there too. Okay, let's throw in the international capital market. Surely they could go out there and look for money from abroad.
Absolutely, that has been our biggest hope all
along.
The Eurobonds. Yeah. The Eurobonds were giving us in the last 4 or 5 years close to $3 billion each year. And we're using this money to solve a lot of problems. Now, when we had our economic crisis in 2022, that market was completely shut. Currently, we do not have access to the Eurobond market.
We've actually stopped servicing that debt for quite a while now. And so that is also closed now. Okay, still, we still need to expand this a bit more, right? We know that we have some scheduled external inflows this year. Can we rely on these? I mean, World Bank, IMF, everybody wants to help us. So what's the problem there? Can't you take some of that money and simply pump it into buying fuel for the plants?
Well, we are expecting an inflow of $1.4 billion, but each of this money is supposed to go into specific, you know, projects. For instance, the IMF is expected to give us $720 million this year. It's supposed to go into BOP financing. And in fact, you know that the most immediate disbursement of $360 million is currently on hold, and we are only hoping to get it by June 2024. Now, from the World Bank, we're expecting $620 million.
The point to make about the IMF amounts you mentioned is that it's predetermined what you can spend it on. You can't spend it on...
strictly on BOP.
Yes.
Support. Mm. Now, let's go to the World Bank, which is scheduled to give us some $620 million this year. This is the breakdown. This money is supposed to go into specific, projects. Now, the first $300 million will go into development policy operation, what they call it, the DPOs. That money is currently pending. And then the next $70 million will go into Ghana Productive Safety Net project. It's currently pending. Then we have the emergency financial sector support, supposed to help us with the recapitalization, $250 million pending. Then there's also the African Development Bank, which is scheduled to give us some $44 million. That money is pending. So in total, $1.4 billion from all of these sources, but they have specific needs that they have to address.
And you say $1.4 billion, and we need, from the Energy Commission's calculations, $1.14 billion.
So just by fuel.
Absolutely. So that just gives you a sense of the task that government is coming to, having to deal with now. But the bottom line, having assessed all these potential sources, is that you begin to appreciate why it's becoming very difficult for government to solve this, because it's a financial problem. In fact, today, as we consider the various options, somebody threw in, why don't you do... we have gold for oil. Yeah. Why don't you do gold for gas?
Well, the gold for gas probably will be one of a good policy, because it's actually saving the amount of money we need to buy the fuel currently. Every month we need about $400 million to buy refined crude. And if you look at the gas, for instance, $95 million, that's less than how much we need to buy refined crude. So if we are indeed looking at a policy like the gold for gas, that's probably an easy one to do compared to the gold for oil.
So you begin to appreciate now why the government is just having to deal with this matter in a way that we still haven't had anybody tell us concretely when this will end, or articulate in very clear terms how they plan to solve this. Let's bring in Kojo Poku. He's the chairman of the Manifesto Committee for the NPP and joins us on the line right now. Mr. Poku, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. Hello, Mr. Poku. Okay, I don't seem to have him just yet, but I want to hear from you wherever you are tonight. Share your thoughts with me. Do you already have the lights out in your area? Let's hear from you. 055-1111-997. And we're still watching very closely what is happening in the Ashanti region with the workers there. Tomorrow, they've already served notice. They're going to go out in force in their red armbands, flying red flags, because they're protesting against the Ashanti regional minister. And this has a contagion effect, because we'll be learning tonight that all regions will now join their ECG colleagues in the Ashanti region on this particular protest. Stay with me for an update on that. Kojo Poku is back on the line with me right now. Hello, thank you, Eva. Mr. Poku, for your time here on Newsline. How are you?
Yeah, Evans, good evening. Evans, for the analysis that you and your colleague has done, then we just close the country and all move to another country. Because from the analysis that voodoo mathematics you and your colleague has done on this line, look, let's be honest with ourselves, Evans. If before you even go to ask the question, let me explain something to you, because I was listening to the voodoo mathematics you and your colleague was doing. If you go and meet somebody selling kilole, and you see that that person needs 10 cedis for the whole year to buy ajongo, where would that 10 cedis come from? Isn't it from the sale of the kilole?
You mean so in this, you need, mean in this
if
sense?
If we need money to buy fuel, isn't the money for, if we need money for fuel to generate electricity, isn't the money for the fuel come from the payment of me and you when we pay our tariff?
Well, Kojo Poku, we touched on that. I don't know if you heard that. I mean, I don't know why you were listening to it. You heard that. We started with that exactly. And we did a march. And the march tell us from the PURC's own document. Even if you collect everything that we sell, ECG sells to us, the money that comes in
as we've seen from the data, is it enough to cover the 1.14 billion that the Energy Commission says we need to buy fuel this year?
Evans, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
You called me for a reason, so please give me the chance to explain anything. What I'm trying to explain to you is that don't let us keep dragging government into this thing as if we are in a helpless situation. The money needed to generate electricity, to buy fuel to generate electricity, PULC has given us a tariff. In that tariff, there is every kilowatt of hour generated, there is a certain percentage that goes towards fuel. So if you need $1.2 billion to generate electricity, it means that you are going to generate electricity enough for you to be able to generate that money and pay that back. Yes, we all understand that there are losses. We all understand that ECG is having problem accounting for some monies that has been collected between August and January or something that PULC is looking up to. But that doesn't present a situation for you to now say that voodoo mathematics that you did.
I don't think you're getting the point here. So you say that there's money coming in from the ECG sale of power. If so, why haven't you bought enough fuel to power the thermal plants?
Which thermal plant doesn't have fuel? Please tell me the thermal plant that doesn't have fuel.
Tonight, as we speak, grid is shedding around 500 megawatts. No, why?
We're shedding any load tonight. We are not shedding any load tonight. You see,
I slept in darkness for 12 hours last night because...
That open your phone line.
Because you have...
Tonight.
Somebody decided to put me off.
Sorry?
I'm saying I slept in darkness for 12 hours last night because somebody
took
power.
Yesterday. You're saying that tonight we are shedding 500. But it's not true. Nobody is shedding load tonight.
Do you or do you not have? And this is multiple sources talking about this, including the former deputy energy minister who was there, who talks about the challenge with securing funds to buy fuel. You are on the manifesto committee. You're saying that you don't have a challenge of securing funds to buy fuel?
There is no such thing as, you see, stop buying into people's propaganda.
Propaganda, including your own former deputy energy minister and the Japan Mesa and the chairman of the Parliament's Energy Committee, Atachan, who has repeatedly said to us on the show and many other shows, including our dialogue last week, that when it met all the stakeholders, it came down to finding money to buy gas.
Ivan, please let me talk. You called me for a reason, so let me talk. There is a simple propaganda that all of you have bought into, which is this thing about government needs money to buy fuel. I'm asking you, which fuel does government need money to buy? You can't even tell me.
No, but your question you're asking is, so if you have, are you saying that you have enough money to buy gas for the plants?
Nobody, you see, that's the problem. You don't buy gas. The fuel, you see, that's the problem. So you ask the question and we'll defend you. The extra fuel that everybody talks about is liquid fuel. Because at some times, there is a shortage of gas because of the less flow coming from Nigeria. So when we have less flow coming from Nigeria, or let's say Ghana gas has a trip, and there isn't enough gas coming from there, you need liquid fuel to power some of these machines. And Ascent Power can use light crude oil. AXA can use HFO. And then the plant, the TTP plant in Kong, can use diesel. So when people say that government doesn't have money to buy oil, they're saying that government has money to buy gas. Gas, we don't have to buy gas cash and carry. Okay? What they are saying that we need money for is the liquid fuel to supplement the shortage when there is a gas shortfall.
Whether it's gas, whether it's fuel, you don't have
to power the plants. Ivan, let me finish. So when you are buying into these propagandas, please get the explanation right before you buy the propaganda that government doesn't have money and government will go to the World Bank, will go to IMF. It's not true. You see, let's not do these things because it's not helping anybody. You're supposed to educate people. Let's not do that.
You still haven't addressed the substantive matter here. Are you stating, Mr. Puku, if you may? Well, what's your point? Your point is that you have fuel to power the plants, or you're saying that what? You still, the fuel is coming, you're buying it on credit, and it hasn't arrived. What's your point exactly? Why are we having the doom so?
But it means that government doesn't have money to gas. Because gas can't carry.
But
government having gas for fuel, it's not gas that they are talking about. It's heavy, it's liquid fuel.
Does it even matter whether it's fuel, is water? Does it matter? I mean, we're sleeping in darkness. We just want the lights on.
No, Evans, if you want to find out why we are in darkness, let's conversation. Stop predicting the conversation by saying that government is broke, the IMF and all the voodoo mathematics you and your colleague went through.
Let me read to you. I mean, you claim you are informed. Let me read to you a document from the GRIDCO. GRIDCO wrote this to the energy ministry, and this is something that they had done between the period 27th March to April 2nd. I want to read you the conclusion. And this was before Parliament's Energy Committee. Listen, it says, generation will be inadequate to meet peak demand for the coming week. Up to 510 megawatts load relief requested to keep the system stable. There's a need to source for more gas from Nigeria above the VRA firm contract to run the idle thermal plants to meet the increasing electricity demand. And then we hear from the former Deputy Energy Minister last week say the government is actually right now in negotiations with Nigeria to do exactly that. So this comes down to gas.
Okay, so but does it say in there that government doesn't have money to pay for the gas?
Do you have money?
You just read that says that government doesn't have money to pay for that gas.
Mr. Poku, do you have money to pay for the gas?
Because we always pay. Go and ask NGAS if Ghana, if VRA owes NGAS. VRA does not owe NGAS. The money to buy the fuel comes from the tariffs you and I pay.
So if you have the money, final question on this: if you have the money to buy the gas, why are we sleeping in darkness?
Government has money to buy gas. Government does not owe anybody before they have to supply the gas. You see, I am educating something, and the more you listen, the better.
Next simple question. Why, Mr. Poku, are millions of Ghanaians sleeping in darkness?
Well, my brother, you just read the configuration that we need to basically negotiate with Nigeria for more gas. Didn't you just read that? And the reason we need to negotiate with Nigeria for more gas is that the Nigeria and is having challenges. They are not able to meet the required gas they're supposed to give us. Okay? Every time Nigeria has given us more gas, we've been able to pay for the gas. So when we say that this is not about money, let's not listen to the NDC propaganda.
And I put it to you that it's not NDC propaganda. It is what we've heard from the chairman of the Energy Committee in Parliament. We've heard so too from the Deputy Energy Minister, who has raised the current challenges with the financing that is currently being dealt with.
Okay, so, tell me exactly what the Deputy Minister said in terms of finance. Did he say that it's broke, we don't have money to pay for gas? Did he say that?
Well, those are your words. But he's raising the issues about the current economic challenges, and that is definitely impacting on government's ability sustainably buy the fuels that we need to power the plants adequately.
Bank and all these that, it's dire and those things. But nobody, I ask you a simple question. What is the gas, what is the fuel source that we need money to pay for? You couldn't tell me. And you're talking about gas. Meanwhile, we don't need money to buy the gas.
Well, final question to you, and the people listening to you make their own judgments on the answers you've given. But final question to you, we've heard from civil society groups who say the president himself must show leadership on this matter. The criticism is that he hasn't. Nobody has laid out a clear plan to fixing this with clear timelines. Fair point?
Well, yes. I agree to understand that we need a bit more clarity from the ministry to basically shed a bit more light and basically diffuse some of this misinformation that you are putting out to the public. Okay, so I entreat the ministry to come out and share more light on some of these issues. And I don't think that there hasn't been leadership. There have been meetings from the ministry, there have been meetings at the presidency, they brought these retreats. I know that there are concrete plans that will manifest in some time soon. Okay, but what I want to put out there is that yes, I will entreat the ministry to come basically bite on what they are doing.
Okay, thank you. That's Kojo Poku there. He chairs the NPP's Manifesto Committee. I want to hear from you. Give me your thoughts on his responses to the key questions that you've been asking over the last few weeks. And let's stay with the issues surrounding the power sector, because in the Ashanti region, it's boiling there among staff of the ECG. Why? Because of the feud now that has erupted between the staff and the Ashanti regional minister. Now, the general managers of Ashanti East, West, South, and SAP Transmission are all automatic members of the Regional Security Council, but the National Executive Committee of the Senior and Junior Workers Union of ECG at an emergency meeting resolved to restrain the managers from attending Ashanti Regional Security Council meetings until the chairman of the council, who doubles as the regional minister, Simon Osemensa, officially apologized to the general manager of Ashanti West for unlawfully ordering his arrest. And tomorrow there are a series of actions that they've decided to start. And I want to bring in right now Bismarck Adoma. He's a vice chairman of the senior staff union of the ECG. Bismarck, thanks for your time here on Newsnight.
Welcome.
You asked the regional minister to apologize and withdraw the case at the police station, and you gave him close update today. Has he done so?
No, sir.
So he hasn't apologized, he hasn't withdrawn the case?
As it is now, he has not done that.
What do you intend to do about this tomorrow?
Yesterday, the NEC met, and we decided that not only in Ashanti region, tomorrow, any part of ECG office, they will put on the red and the staff will wear the red. And after that, we have also instructed our four general managers in Ashanti region that they should not attend any meeting called by the regional minister.
And this is the first of many steps, correct?
Yes, sir.
What's the full roadmap here?
Tomorrow after the red, the NEC will meet and take the next line of action.
Is this only happening in the Ashanti region or this is national?
National.
But why? I mean, this is an Ashanti regional problem. You're fighting with the Ashanti regional minister.
The union, we have something called solidarity. So if you touch one, you touch all. So if you touch Ashanti region, you touch the whole Ghana. That's why the whole Ghana, at the NEC yesterday, after our deliberation, we agreed that it's going to be national, not only Kumasi.
And will this affect ECG staff going to work and ensuring that our lights are on? I mean, we're already struggling with this Dumsor matter. Will this affect it at all going forward?
We all be out at workplace, do what we do every day and what we know.
Thank you very much. That there is Bismarck Adoma. He's a vice chairman of the senior staff union of the ECG, speaking to us there about the issues in the Ashanti region among the staff and the Ashanti regional minister. Many of you have joined us on WhatsApp with your thoughts on what you've heard so far here on Newsnight. And I want to share with you a bit of that. Just before that, I want to remain in the Ashanti region just a while longer, just a second longer, because I've just been joined by my colleague, Oheming Terrier, who is joining us right now on the telephone line. And Oheming, there's something else you're following up on, right? Ashanti region is looking ahead to tomorrow. That's a big day. What are we looking forward to as far as the Kumasi International Airport is concerned?
According to the Minister of Transport, the Kumasi International Airport will be opened to traffic to the general public in June this year. This means that over 800,000 air passengers who have had to travel from the northern part of the Ashanti, of Ghana, to Greater Accra region for their international trips will have the opportunity to board aircraft or flight in the Ashanti region.
Thank you very much. That's all him in there. A quick update there on that. And many of you who are looking forward to that project ticking off now have been served with an update on that. A few of you now have messages in, and I want to share it. And Kojo Poku is now a big man in government, hence he says he's lost his sense of reality. And that there is the thought of Richard in Akwetia. And a few more on this subject right now. This one from Francis Medina says, Evans, do not waste your time. These people, they will keep their fingers in the furnace to deny there is a crisis.
Also, Guy Fawkes in Tema, he says, I know Kojopoku from Kumasi. Next time when he comes on radio, kindly ask him, is this how he wants us to retain them in power? That is a question that he is asking. And also, another one coming in from Kojo. He says, the Kojo man is asking the energy minister to come out, and before now said there is leadership on the part of the president. It's just a manifestation of his voodoo communication. I live in Dev Traco, and we have been in the dark since morning. Called it gross incompetence, he says. And that was a console is just going crazy with your comments on this. This one says, good evening. It says, the arrogance of this MPP government is immeasurable. And I think the only antidote to their nonchalant behavior is to vote them out on December 7. And he's already campaigning for his favorite candidate on the matter. And you also sent in one without a name. It says, when Kojo was an energy expert, he was one when he became a politician in open. He is one too. And just a few more. Simply a number of you interested in the subject. NS says, when you call MPP propagandist, he says, as energy expert, he will behave the way he did. And a very final one on this. And this is from East Legon, Coach T. Daniel says, I'm totally disappointed in Kojopoku's answers to the questions. If I left the house this morning without light, what I was grateful for was that I ironed my shirt yesterday evening. The question is, what about others who found themselves in this dire situation of doomsday this morning? Please, office holders must show candor and respect for citizens. Those are your thoughts on the stories we've done so far, particularly the issue with the ongoing erratic power supply. Still ahead, threat of strike by teacher unions imminent as meeting over their conditions of service with government ends inconclusively again.
It was about then we went to continue with the negotiations. The nothing has changed.
Stay with us for that and more. We'll also hear from some of the unions already protesting against the challenges with the tier 2 pensions.
And we indicated to government that should they default again, the consequences will be dire.
And Mr. Shan is here with the latest from the world of business. Have you been sleeping in darkness lately?
Evans, I slept in darkness last night.
Okay.
Somewhere up to 1 a.m.
Okay.
And I think the light came back somewhere, I think 1:30 thereabouts.
Yeah, we've been talking about this being a financing challenge. Maybe you have something in business that may attempt a resolution.
Definitely.
Is there some money coming in somewhere?
The business community are really complaining.
Okay.
Right. So in business, the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry appeals to government to publish load shedding timetable to help business plan their production schedules. And the Ghana Shippers Authority unhappy with a large consignment of uncleared government goods at the port, resulting in loss of millions of dollars to foreign shipping lines through demurrage charges. Business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Kingdom Books and Stationery, Syntex Tanks and Pepsodent Charcoal and Herbal. Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. I am James Ishan. Let's settle for the details. First off, the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industries has appealed to the government to publish a load-shedding timetable to help businesses plan their production schedules. The chamber laments that businesses are unable to produce at full capacity, but are paying for labor even though there is no power to produce goods and services. Speaking to Joy Business, the president of the GNNCCI, Clement Osamwaku, said a timetable will enable employers plan a roster for their staff.
You don't go to your office only to find out the light is off. No, you must be able to plan, and like just as I was telling you, you'll be able to manage your employees and know the kind of production you can do in a day and meet your demand for goods and services. And you can't just go in when you don't know what to do, and then the power outages come in and you'll be running around, employees sit down, and at the end of the month you pay them. Mind you, we are also producing for the rest of the world. We are in an open economy. We are producing for other countries for which we have to meet certain demands. And if you are not able to do that, we'll cut short your supply. And it's a lot of revenue to us. And I believe that this is not something that the government can joke on. If the timetable is coming, it should be very short in a short run. Believe that this is not beyond their strength to restore power to us.
Clement Osei-Amwaku is the president of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry. To some other stories, the Ghana Shippers Authority has bemoaned the practice where state agencies import goods and leave them at the port, resulting in a cost to the country through demurrages and rent charges. According to the authority, the country lost $24 million to foreign shipping lines in demurrage charges, majority of the fines incurred by the state agencies. Speaking on behalf of the Chief Executive Office of the authority at a workshop for metropolitan, municipal and district assemblies, the director in charge of operations, Sylvia Asana Dawdo, said such acts lead to financial loss to the state.
A casual look at the uncleared cargo list reveals consignment of state-owned agencies that have overstayed at the port, with some chalking hundreds of days at the port. Even though these consignments are not forfeited to the state for purposes of auction, their eventual clearance will be accompanied by huge demurrage and rent charges accumulated over the period. The authority reiterates its appeal to chief directors, chief executives, managing directors, and other relevant officers of MDAs, SOEs, to take urgent action to ensure that these consignments are expeditiously cleared from the port to mitigate the use of state resources for such avoidable costs.
You are there, the director in charge of operations at the Ghana Shippers Authority, Sylvia Asana Dawda Owu. Now, let's do some banking story. And banking consultant Dr. Richmond Itiahene has blamed the poor corporate governance for the state of the National Investment Bank. According to him, recapitalizing the bank would be futile if there are weak control system. He further urged government to dispose of NIB after successful restructuring to save the fiscals of the economy. Dr. Itiahene made the assertion after the International Monetary Fund gave government the go-ahead to recapitalize the National Investment Bank.
From my experience, and don't forget, I've worked there for a very long time, and I left the place about 20 years ago. Once upon a time, there was a fantastic corporate governance where the board was very up and doing, where the CEOs were tough, where management team knew what they were doing. Things could not get bad. Once upon a time, let me make a history of NIB. NIB was the first bank in Ghana to have structured letters of credit cutting deal, $2.3 million, the first in the history of Ghana. No bank in Ghana has done the structured letters of credit for cutting deal. All these things have gone into drain. And I'm saying that as the IMF wants to recapitalize the Bank of Ghana, I urge them, they should strictly look at the corporate governance.
Let's do some tax-related story. And the tax on resident Ghanaians earning income from abroad is expected to start next week at the end of the month. The Ghana Revenue Authority has insisted that vessels will exclude Ghanaians living abroad. Julie Essiam is the Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority.
We have specifically agreed with GOG, our mother ministry, and the fund to implement a compliance measure on foreign income. Foreign income on resident Ghanaians, and I want to emphasize this, resident Ghanaians. Yes, okay. It's resident Ghanaians. By definition of the law, anybody who lives in the country for 183 days is classified as a resident Ghanaian. There's been a lot of questions on this measure from foreign nationals. Foreign nationals meaning Ghanaians who live abroad. This is related or relevant to resident, which is citizens of Ghana, obviously, who are here.
Julie Siam is the Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority. Meanwhile, tax analyst Francis Timoboy is supporting the Ghana Revenue Authority's move to tax resident Ghanaians earning foreign income. According to him, the initiative has the potential to rake in the needed revenue to shore up Ghana's revenue deficit. Speaking to Joy Business, he stated that the perfect implementation of the initiative will improve Ghana's fiscal standings.
If you look at the 70,000 accounts that the GRSA have given exchanges at January, from 40 countries alone, it means that if we extend the attendance, we can even get more. And the value of that amount standing in the individual accounts to close to $3 billion, and they can assess about $1.6 billion as tax revenue. It doesn't really mean that that is the amount that the GRSA is going to collect. Now that they have the information, they are examining it, so they'll be inviting people to come and justify or explain the source of that income. If clearly, we are able to raise about $1.6 billion. Prior, you know that is even more than the VAT on the household consumption. And
Francis Timobo is a tax consultant. And that's all for business on Newsnight with me, James Ishan. Over to you, Evans.
Hello, Ms. Bao.
Hello, Evans.
Hello, Evans.
Yeah, let's do some sports now because African Games gold medalist Joseph Paul Amwa and Benjamin Azamati are expected to lead Ghana's quest for Olympic qualification at the World Relays in Bahamas, which is set for next month. Well, my colleague Daniel Krantin has been explaining why this competition is important for Ghana's, for a sport in the Olympic Games for Ghana.
With about 90 days to the start of the Paris 2024 Olympic Games, no Ghanaian athlete has yet confirmed qualification to the event. However, Ghana's men's 4x100 relay team represents the country's brightest chance of qualifying for the multi-sport event when they participate in the World Relays in Bahamas next month. Slated for May 4th to 5th, the World Relays will determine 14 of the 16 relay spots in Paris. The two top teams in each heat on day one will automatically qualify for the final, which in turn books a straight slot to the Olympics. The remaining teams will be given another opportunity to qualify on day two, with the top two teams in each of the three additional races booking the remaining six slots to the Olympics. Ghana famously qualified for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics after an impressive showing during the World Relays in Seletia 2021.
Evans, that's it for sports.
And thank you, Ms. Bauer. In today's film exhibition, we take you to the Akwitia Lion community in the Ashanti region, where residents live in a self-created, filth-infested neighborhood. My colleague, Clinton Yeboah, sheds light on the alarming situation, highlighting the insanitary conditions that have become the new norm in the area.
Discarded electronics, food packages, empty plastic bottles and glasses, leaking sewage, rotten food scraps, fruit peels and other biodegradable materials, tourists through the maze of houses. Open defecation, once an abnormal necessity, has become an accepted norm. Residents have expressed growing concerns over the deteriorating sanitation conditions plaguing their neighborhood. The filth is made by the people who live around here. They sniff through waste in the gutter at night and dawn. They also defecate here. Meanwhile, we have a dumping site just close to the Abuabo station. It is very worrying. When you say it, they will insult you. Local workers around the area echoed similar sentiments, revealing the challenges they face daily due to lack of proper waste management. We close at 7 p.m. and even before it's dark, you can spot people defecating in plain sight. And when we open the gutter, all the waste run through here. The scrap dealers have also turned here into a dump site for their unwanted waste. Unfortunately, the canker does not end in houses and workplaces. Now, when you walk 3 minutes from the gutter, which has been filled with waste and stagnant waters, you can see a congregation of women here gathered to prepare meal for public consumption. Although most of them have denied interviewed with us, some of them who talk with us are complaining bitterly how this is affecting their business and activities here.
The filth starts from the far end. We have no control over it.
As concerns mount, residents and workers are calling on local authorities to enforce regulations and hold offenders accountable.
But the residents seemed unperturbed. They should set up a task force purposely for this to punish perpetrators.
While some residents seem unperturbed and indifferent, the Kumasi Metropolitan Assembly Chief Executive, Samuel Pine, has disclosed the Assembly lost over 30,000 cedis to drench waste from the gutters in the neighborhood every month. He says the Assembly will model the vicinity into its urban development policies to deal with the waste conditions of the area.
We've been battling with waste management in that area, especially to the Wayek end. Every month that you go to do cleaning, cost the Assembly more than 30,000 Ghana cedis to do that. We did that on a monthly basis, and it's just a hell on our finances, especially when there's a fire outbreak, there's a potential area for criminals to be hiding.
And as you know, it's across our social media platforms, and we'll be coming to your neighborhood pretty shortly. Also, look out for our filth exhibition campaign on our social media platforms and share your own pictures and videos with us. It's time for the Geek Squad. Hello, Peps.
Hi, everyone.
What's coming up tonight?
We're having a conversation on Meta AI.
Oh, yeah, the AI we now see in our WhatsApp.
On WhatsApp, exactly. Okay. We're going to have a conversation on how to use it. It's right there in our faces. We can't avoid it. So we need to just know how to use it.
I've been using it like crazy since I saw it, I think, over the weekend.
Yes.
It's been very good already. Mm-hmm. When I realized that you can actually activate it whilst you're chatting with somebody.
Yes.
The only challenge with that is, when the response comes, the person knows that it has been generated by the AI, because you have to do
at Meta AI
before you can ask the question. Yeah. But I wish, though, that it can generate the response for you and send it without the person knowing that it was generated by an AI. You know, so for me that's the only downside to it, because everybody that knows, you know, so somebody says something, you want to quite figure out what do you mean, and then
you can have a one-on-one chat with Meta AI.
yes itself, but that one is separate, right?
So you can do that and then copy
and come. It's too long process, man. But I'm looking for